And we're holding on to page Lamedtes in Bavamatsia, the last paragraph of Ois Memtes, the paragraph Masnissin Amakabal Sada Machaver. Well, there's a few paragraphs in Amakabal Sada. Okay, Amakabal Sada Machaver, Lazora Sorin. Six lines from the bottom. The Mishnah had said, again, the subject of most of the perek is the details of a makabel, a person who's renting a field from somebody else, either as an oris, where he's going to pay a percentage, or as a choicher, where he's going to pay a fixed amount. So the Mishnah says, a makabel sodom chaver lazora sodom, if he's makabel, that he's going to pay, that he's going to plant barley, and pay X amount of barley per year, lo yizru enachitin, then he cannot instead change the terms and plant wheat over there. Because wheat takes out more nutrients from the soil than barley does. So therefore, he can't do it without the permission of the owner. Rashi points out, the Gemara mentions in this perek that most of the dinim in the Mishnayos of this perek apply either to a choicher or an oris, but not both. And then the Gemara goes through, and then Rashi goes through with each one and explains what the logic. Here, if it was an oris where he pays a percentage of the crop to the owner, then either the owner stands to gain from having wheat grown there. It reduces the potential of the soil, fine, but he gets a better crop out of it. But when the deal is that he's going to be paying just a fixed amount of wheat or of barley, then the owner of the field stands nothing to gain from him planting wheat over there, and therefore he can't do it without the permission of the owner. On the other hand, chitin yizu en resardim, but if the deal was that he's going to plant wheat over there, then he could plant barley instead, because barley takes less nutrients out of the soil, so it's better for the soil. Reb Shimon Gamliel also chola. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel says it's also to change in either direction. So the Gemara says, Amar Reb Chista, my time is Reb Shimon Gamliel. Why? On the face of it, the Tanakama has a valid point that when you're planting barley instead of wheat, then it will leach out less from the soil and it'll be better. So why does Reb Shimon Gamliel say you can't do that either? Because the pasuk says She'eris Yisrael La Yasu Avla, the remnant of the Jewish people will not do anything dishonest. V'lo yedabru chazav, and will not speak falsehood. V'lo yimatzu b'fiyim l'shoyin tarmis, and there will not be found in their mouths a tongue of deceitfulness. So in other words, a yid has to keep his word. In short. The Smag brings on this, Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol, brings on their famous tradition, brings him in this connection. He deals with the mitzvah of telling the truth and not lying. He says, you know, one purpose of it is we're always preparing for the Golah Mitzvah Shlema every day after learning. We have Yom Yom Mashiach Golah, and that part of that is, in other words, that you want to have the Moshe Mashiach, that the Goyim are going to say, you know what, this is a nation that Taka deserves to be on top, that deserves to be with the greatness that they are. All this time they've been true. Mashenkin, if not, then, you know, yeah.
They have to keep their word about the
Shevet Mitzvah. It's not so much one of the Shevet Mitzvahs Nenayach, but it is an accepted thing in the world that a person has to keep his word. Yeah, there's a Sicha where the Rebbe talks about how Yaakov is able to confront Laban and tell him, Lama Rimi Sonny, why'd you cheat me? And then give me Leah instead of Rachel, when there's no explicit Shevet Mitzvahs Nenayach, right, because it's a well-known thing. It's a well-known accepted thing in the world. But the Smag makes a point that particularly for us Jews, it's particularly important to keep our word and let the Goy and be able to see all the time that we really are scrupulously honest. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about suit and dinim that involve things growing by the edge of a field. So that leads the Gemara into different details about fields and farms. So now the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Yehuda L'Rovin Bar Rav Nachman. He says, Ovin Ochi. He says, my brother, my good friend Ovin. You should not buy a plot of land, a field that is close to the city. Why? Now you might think, what's the problem? It's closer to the city. It's more convenient. A person is not allowed to stand near somebody else's field when the field has the standing grain in it, because you shouldn't ruin it with an ayin hara. So it's better to have it further away from the city, because then nobody will pass by to accidentally on purpose give it an ayin hara. So the Gemara says, Aini, is that so? On the contrary, it comes out from the next thing that we're going to learn, that having a field near the city is actually a very good thing. Rab Abba one time met up with the Talmidim of Rab, Omolahu, when he asks them, my Omer Rab Bahani Kroy, what did Rab tell us? What did he tell you? What did he teach you in Droshes of the pasuk Baruch Ata Ba'ir, Baruch Ata Ba'Sadeh, and the brachos in Parshas Kisavei, right? Blessed are you in the city and blessed are you in the field. Baruch Ata Ba'Vayecha, Baruch Ata Ba'Tisecha, blessed are you when you're coming in, and blessed are you when you're going out. So what's the problem? The Rif points out that that one way of so first of all, Marsha says that one question is, we have it more generally. The Torah says Yitzav Hashem Itcha as a bracha v'chol mishlach yodecha, that Hashem will give you a bracha in everything that you set your hand to. So why does it need to mention specifically Ba'ir and Basada and Bevayacha and Betzeisecha? So therefore, so we have to understand what these specific things mean. The Rif points out another thing. If it says Baruch Ata Ba'ir, Baruch Ata Basada, then what do you need? Baruch Ata Ba'yacha or Baruch Ata Ba'tzeitzecha. When you're coming into the city, then it's from the field, then it's Ba'yacha. And when you're leaving the city to go to the field, it's Ba'tzeitzecha. Therefore, Rav Abba wanted to know from the Talmudim of Rav, so how did he darshan these psukim? So they said Hochi Omer Rav. Here's how Rav explained those psukim. Baruch Ata Ba'ir, when it says blessed are you in the city, it doesn't just mean when you're in the city. It means sheyehe beischa samuch beis haknesis. Your house should be near the shul. That way, it's easier for you to go daven. That way, you can spend more time in the shul, which the Gemara mentions elsewhere is good for arichos yamim. There's a number of reasons why it would be good to live near the shul. Baruch Ata Basada, and when it says blessed are you in the field, means shiyuhu nechasecha kreivim la'ir, means that your property, your field, should be close to the city, so that it's easy enough to gather in the peiros and bring them in. Now Maharsha points out, we find all over Shas that usually the shuls were usually outside the city. This comes up in Halacha as well. The reason why we have a brochachas main sheva, the reason we have the extra part on Friday night is because that people could catch up. People who came late to shul could catch up, and everybody would be able to walk home together rather than remaining in a deserted shul.
I'm probably going to catch up. Did the time mean 5 minutes or an hour without it?
That's just we're talking about a person who came a couple of minutes late. So he'll have, during the time when the chazan is saying Brach Achmein Sheva, he'll have a few minutes to catch up. Therefore, so now the bracha is that the shul should instead be near his house, so he doesn't have that, and he can more easily make it to and from shul. Marsha mentions in this connection a Gemara in Brachas, by the way, that says if a person has a shul in his city and he doesn't go there, he's called a shochen roi, he's called a bad neighbor. Why? Because if it's in his city, if it's outside the city, okay, you know, it may be hard for him to get there, especially at night or whatever, but if it's in the city, he has no excuse. So that's the Baruch Ata Ba'ir, is that in the city, your shul should be near your house. Baruch Ata Ba'Sadeh means, again, shiur nechasecha, kreivim la'ir, that your property, that your field should be close to the city, so that's more easy to, after you harvest the produce, to bring it home. And Rav continued, Baruch Ata B'Vayecha, when it says, blessed are you when you're coming, that means, you shouldn't come home from a trip and find that your wife is a Sufik Nida. Now, Rashi says over here that it means V'choshekin Vaday. All the more so, you won't find her a Vaday Nida. But even a Suffolk, either way, you won't be able to have relations with her. So the bracha is that you'll come home and you're right away after, you know, you miss each other after the trip, and you'll be able to have relations. This Gemara is also it brought in Sanhedrin. Marsha points out that Rashi there explains otherwise. Rashi explains when Rav said Suffolk Nida, he means on the contrary. Mela, the guy comes home and finds his wife Vaday Nida. Okay, that's how it is. You know, what can I do? But when it's Suffolk Nida, then he starts thinking to himself, you know what? Is she really Nida after all? Maybe it's not. And maybe I'm just depriving myself and her for nothing. And he starts thinking, etc. So therefore, the bracha is, if she's Vaday Nida, then fine. That can be expected. But the bracha is she won't be Suffolk Nida, so that person won't be second-guessing himself like that. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out a related point as well. If she's Vaday Nida, he knows to stay away from her. The Gemara elsewhere points out that a Yid doesn't need, that a Yiddish couple does not need all kinds of guards and things like that to prevent them from having relations at the wrong time of the month. Suga Vasheshanim, we're hedged in by a hedge of roses. All we need is roses over there, and we ourselves realize that we have no business crossing it. But when it's Suffolk, then a person is likely to think to start cutting corners, and therefore the bracha is that he won't be tempted to do that. Conceivably, there could be an Ashram Tali involved, but not necessarily, really, actually, because the halacha
is more expensive.
The halacha Ashram Tali is more expensive. That's true. Yeah. So there is that point as well. Okay. In any case, so that's the bracha that you won't find Hosafik Nida when you come home. That's the Borachat Bavayacha, or Borachat and Borachat Bateisecha means Shiyut Set Soy Me'echa Kamoisecha, means that your descendants should be like you. They could be even better than you, but Akaponim, they should be at least like you. Marshall refers to in this connection, you have the famous story in Tainis where Rab Nachman and Rab Yitzchak are having a Suda together, and that was the Suda when they discussed Yaakov Avinu Leimes, and so forth. And then after that, the Gemara says that before they left, Rab Nachman asked Rab Yitzchak to give him a bracha, and he gives him the famous marshal of a tree that's planted by a water stream, and it has beautiful foliage and beautiful fruit, and what kind of bracha can I give you? You have everything you want. You could have already, maybe it's Yerotzen, that all the peiris that are planted from your seed should be exactly like you. And he says the same thing to Rav Nachman. You have everything you could possibly want. The Gashmias, the Beruchnias, the bracha should be that your descendants should be of your caliber. So then the same kind of thing over here. That's the Baruchat of Etzeitzecha. And one point of it is, in other words, that when a person taka leaves children who are of his caliber, who are like him, then he's not really gone from the world. Then his Betzei Secha is a going out to the Olam HaEmes, but nevertheless, he still has a bracha at that point that his Betzei Secha is in the best possible way. Okay, so that was what the Talmidim told Rav Abba. V'omelahu, so now Rav Abba tells them, you should know, Rav Yochanan loy omahach, you should know, Rav Yochanan, who was Rav Abba's Rebbe, did not say like that. He learnt those psukim, he darshan those psukim somewhat differently. So he wanted to hear, Pashat, he wanted to hear from the Talmidim of Rav, whether their Rebbe darshan it the same as Rav Yochanan or different. So Rav Abba says, let me tell you what Rav Yochanan said. Ela Boruch Atabair means Shiahebekise Samoch Shochancha, means that you should have a bathroom close to your table. As we've been learning in the Altadebis Shulchan Aruch, it was often the case back then that people did, generally the case, that people didn't have bathrooms at home. They would have to go and find a place in the street. And as we talked about, during the daytime, that's a problem because people are always coming by and it's not sneistic. So you have to go very far away. Only by night do you have more of a heter to do it close by. So the bracha is that you should have a bathroom close to your table so that you don't have to go so far away. And this way it's healthier. It's healthier that after having eaten, And Rashi points out, anyway, the Gemara tells us that Bechlal, before a person, and we're going to learn it in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, that a person is supposed to check himself whether he needs to go to the bathroom before he eats and after he eats. So like this, if it's close by, then it's convenient to be able to do that. Rashi also points out what happens if it's far away. If he eats and then he feels the need to go, he's going to have to hold himself in for a while, and that can cause certain kinds of intestinal diseases. So for all those reasons, better to have it close by. The Maharal says kind of a symbolic explanation of it also, that a Beis HaKiseh refers to not just where you unload your physical waste, it also refers, there's a metaphorical Beis HaKiseh where people insult you or do other things that you don't like you unload it. So that should be close by. You should always have the ability to get rid of such negativity quickly. So Aval Beis HaKnesses Loi. However, Rabbi Yochanan specifically said that it should not be the case that the shul is close to the house. Unlike Rav, who would learn Borachat HaBeir to mean that, Rabbi Yochanan says no. Rabbi Yochanan, the time they do, must have Psias Yesh. Rabbi Yochanan, that is following his shita, where he says that there's schar psias. The Eibishter gives reward for the extra steps that a person takes to go to the shul. Rashi refers in this connection to a Gemara in Soita, where one time there was an almana who used to walk to Rabbi Yochanan's shul, even though it was further away from her house, and Rabbi Yochanan says to her, aren't there closer shuls? And she says, schar psias. So Rabbi Yochanan learned from that there's a schar psias, and therefore better to have adrab, better to have that your shul is far away from your house, so you can get more schar for the walking there itself. The walking there itself becomes part of the mitzvah, al-derech, like Aliyah the Regal. Baruch Atah Basadeh, Rabbi Yochanan continued in his Dirasha, what does Baruch Atah Basadeh, you should be blessed in the field mean? Means, you should have, your nechasim should be divided into three. Shlish b'tvuah, one third of your property should be growing grain. Shlish b'zeisim, one third olives, or shlish b'gfanim, and one third grapes. What's the good of that? Rashi says sometimes you have a bad year for one crop and not for another. If you're diversified like that, it's like nowadays, a diversified stock portfolio, even if one of them goes bad, you have the other ones that are still good. Maharsha says that's true, but you already have Baruch Pri Ad Masecha. So therefore, so why do you need this as well? Rather Maharshal says, the vote is, these are the three primary needs of a person. We find them among the Shiva Minim of Eretz Yisrael. Grain for basic food, grapes for your basic drink, wine, and olives for olive oil and for smearing on your skin and for illumination. And we see that each of those, the Chachamim set up a separate bracha of their own. For grain things, you have mezonos or hamotzi. For wine, you have alagefen. And for oil, the Gemara says, in principle, you should actually make ha'etz on oil, except that you don't drink it by itself. You usually drink it mixed with something else, because it's not healthful to drink it by itself. But the Gemara discusses, there can be a case where a person is drinking it mainly for the oil, and he mixes something else in. Let's say he has a sore throat. Then, in fact, you would say ha'etz on it. So we see how important these three things are, and therefore, that's the idea that he should have dafka, all those three things, in order that he should have all the good things. Eitz Yosef points out, you know, also that we have in Shema, this way he has all the good, and this way he has all the possible kinds of good. And when it says Baruch Atah B'Vayachol, Baruch Atah B'Tisecha, Rabbi Yochanan Darshan, that unlike Rav, who had said that it means that you shouldn't find your wife Safik Nidu when you come home, and Baruch Atah B'Tisecha, you should have descendants like you, Rabbi Yochanan learned it differently. Shekehi Yitzioschem in Olam could be Yoschel Olam. You leaving the world should be as good as when you came into the world. Ma B'Yoschel Olam B'Leichet, you came into the world without Averis. Kach Yitzioschem in Olam B'Leichet, so it should be that you leave this world without Averis either. Maharshal refers to Mizrahi and Rashi on the Pasuk, who says one reason to darshan it that way is because why does it say Baruchata Bavayacha or Baruchata Batesecha first? Don't you go out before you come in? Maharshal says that's not really such a reason for it. Sometimes we find that the Pasuk will put them out of order. But it's true. You do often find, you know, going out before coming in, but therefore that would be why the Gemara does darshan over here, that it doesn't mean coming in as in coming home from business and going out as in going to your business, but rather it refers to coming into this world and leaving this world. Okay, in any case, the point is that Rav had said that it's a bracha to have your nechosim close to the city. And in fact, by the way, actually, the Gemara in Brachas talks about the bracha that an Orach should give the Balabas. The Gemara mentions in Brachas that when you're having somebody lead benching, ideally it should be an Orach, so you can give a bracha to the Balabas. You'll find in some Sidurim and some benchers, they have a nusach of several lines that the Orach says. We kind of just fold it into that. We say, Orach moni vorachas ovi mori ves imi merosi. Anyway, and one of the things mentioned in there is that his nechosim should be kriven la'ir, as we're saying over here. So we see it's good to have them near the city. Yet we're also saying that Rav had said it shouldn't be close to the city because of an ayin hara. So what is it?
There's a calling down. How does
that work? The orach with a kohen. If there's an orach versus a kohen, I'm not sure. I mean, there was a mitzvah of a kiddashtoy for a kohen. So then I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay. In any case, so the answer is loikasha. The difference is, is the field surrounded by a wall and a hedge versus where it's not? If it's surrounded by a wall and a hedge, then good. There's no problem of an ayin hara because nobody can peek in over there. So then it's good to have it close to the city because then you also have the convenience of being able to bring the crops back home easily. As opposed to, if it doesn't have that, better it should be far away from the city, because even though you'll have the convenience of bringing things home faster, on the other hand, you have the fact that it's subject to an ayin hara. Okay. Speak.
So the person walking next to the field, but in his mind, he wants to praise the person. It's not an ayin hara.
Okay, but he may not mean to, but inadvertently, he may give an ayin hara, so it's still, yeah. The fact is, Rav had said, also lo'adam, it's also for a person to do that. Yeah, the Rambam mentions in one of his Trovas, and it's not, strictly speaking, also, it's not like it's one of the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. It means it's a midas chasidus, not to, but still, yeah. Now, speaking of this matter of ayin hara, the Gemara says, when the pasuk says, v'heser Hashem mimcha kol choli, Hashem will remove from you all choli, all sickness. Now, the Gemara is assuming that kol choli means one particular thing that all kinds of sicknesses depend on. So what is that one factor that Hashem is promising that if you do what Hashem wants, he'll take that away, and therefore you won't be susceptible to many different kinds of sicknesses? So, Amar Rav, Zehu, Zu, Ayin, So Rav says this refers to the ayin. This refers to the effect of an ayin hara. Ion Yaakov points out that the expression v'heisir, Hashem will remove, suggests that it's something inborn already, that it's something inherent to the person, and Hashem has to remove it. So each one of them is going to argue, what is that thing that's so inherent to a person, to the human condition, that Hashem promises that he's going to take it away? So Rav says it refers to the ayin hara. And the Gemara says, Rav l'tainei. Rav is going according to his svara. The Rav solik l'beit kivri. One time Rav went to a beis hakvaris. Ovad mai de ovad. He did what he did over there. Rashi explains that he knew a certain kind of lachash. He knew a certain kind of spell where he could say it by the kvarim and then be able to tell for each person what was the cause of death and whether they died in their expected time or prematurely or ayin hara or whatever. So he was able to do that. Eitz Yosef brings a couple of other explanations from the Aruch. Another one is that he did a Shailas Cholim. He asked in a dream and got an answer, as we find different Gdolei Yisrael throughout the generations who did that. Another possibility the Aruch brings is he planted trees by each of the Kvarim and beswore the trees that they shouldn't grow unless this person died on time. In their expected time, not prematurely. And then Omar, and he concluded from his results, from his lachash or his shela scholar or his trees or whatever, tzadik tes ba'ayin ra be'echad b'derech eret. 99 out of 100 people in this Beis HaKvaris died of an ayin hara. The remaining 1% died of natural causes not related to ayin hara. So therefore, we see that Rav holds that the primary cause of machla is ayin hara. Tosfos points out an interesting thing. The Gemara mentions in a number of places, we had it earlier in this Masechta in connection with Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara mentions it in a number of places that the descendants of Yosef are not subject to an ayin hara. We learn it from Pasuk in this week's parasha. The Yid Gul Aroi, the Kerav Aretz, that Dogim Shabayam are covered by the water and then they're immune to the ayin hara, and then the same way Bnei Yosef are. So how comes it that people from Shevet Yosef dies? So Tosfos says, fine, more of them proportionally die of other causes, of derech eretz, of natural causes, more than others. So fine, in other words, had Rav gone to a Beis HaKvaris, where people from Shevet Yosef were buried, he might have found a larger percentage of those who died by derech eretz. But among Jewish people collectively, or among humanity collectively, it's 99 to 1.
That doesn't mean they didn't live a long time.
It could also mean they lived a long time. So Marsha points out, after all, you know, it makes sense because Shevet Yosef, for the most part, lived in the kingdom of the Aseret HaShvatim. They were taken into Golos, V'chalach, V'chover, all the places where Aseret HaShvatim were taken. Rav, the Beis HaKvaris that Rav visited, was in Bavel, where the Shvatim of Yehuda and Binyamin were taken. Fine, there were members of other Shvatim mixed in among them as well, but for the most part, they were from Yehuda and Binyamin and Kohenim and Leviim. So it makes sense as Tosfos says, that very small percentage of the Jews in Bavel would have been from Shevet Yosef. So anyway, so that's what Rav explains. That 99% of people die from Ayin Hara, and therefore Rav says that when Hashem promises v'heisim v'mchokol choyli, that Hashem will remove all sickness from among Jews, then it means that Hashem will remove the effects of the Ayin Hara. Ushmul amazeha ruach. Shmuel says, on the other hand, it means the wind or the air. Shmuel, with his expertise as a doctor, knew that people are generally harmed, their health is generally harmed by some kind of wind. Rashi points out it'll depend on the time, different winds blow at different times, different people are affected by them in different ways, but Shmuel said that's the primary cause of death. So the Gemara says, what about, according to Shmuel, people who are executed by the government, which in those days meant they're beheaded? They obviously didn't die of ruach. They died of having their head chopped off. Shmuel says everybody dies from something involving ruach. So the question is, the Shmuel, now Rav at least had said 99 to 1, but Shmuel seems to be making a blanket statement, hakol baruach. So what do you mean? What about haruge malchus? With them, you can't say the cause of death is ruach. And the answer is Hanuchnami. You know what? Even with the Haruge Malchus, in Ilav Zika, if it weren't for the wind, Abdullah Samtiri or Sama, they could apply to them a type of ointment that causes cut flesh to knit back together. We'll learn about it in a while. Beis Hashem in Baba Basra, when we have all the stories of Rabba Baba Chana, one of the stories features this kind of herb. that has the property of causing cut flesh to knit back together. So if it weren't for the fact that the wind gets in there, they could have conceivably done that for Choye, and the person would still survive having his head chopped off. Because in other words, you could put it back on his neck and apply Samteri, and it would knit back together. The only reason it doesn't, the only reason the person dies is because Zika, because wind gets in there and causes things to go wrong. There's an interesting halacha that comes out of this also, and a little anecdote that the Rambam tells about himself. We know when the Rambam wrote his sefer Yad HaChazaka, Mishneh Torah, for the most part he doesn't include his sources for the halachas. Once in a great while he'll refer to a particular goyin or a particular gemara or whatever, but it's very rare. So, the Rambam writes in a letter, one time one of the Dayanim from Alexandria came to him with a copy of Mishneh Torah, and he turns to a particular halacha in Hilchos Ritzeach or Shmiras Nefesh. The halacha is over there that Rambam says that if a person cuts somebody's neck, he cuts his two simonim, then in many circumstances, we cannot be mechayev the person to, let's say he did it b'shoigig. In many cases, we cannot be mechayev him to run away to the Orei Mikla, because it might be that the victim himself afterwards was thrashing around and caused himself to die sooner. As opposed to the Rambam says, if it was like in an airtight room, then knock, because then there's no zika, no wind that could have gotten in there. So the guy turns, this Rav, this Dayan, turns to the Rambam and says, where's the source of this halacha? Says it's a halacha in Ritzeach or Shemiras Nefesh. It's probably in Sanhedrin or in Makkos. That's where it discusses these dinim. The Rav says, I looked in those places. I can't find it. The Rambam says, okay, let me think about this a minute. I think it might be a Gemara in Gittin. Takes the Gemara Gittin off the shelf. Remember, this is not a printed Gemara like we have now. This is a handwritten Gemara. And he starts leafing through it. He can't find it. It is, in fact, a Gemara in Gittin. The Rambam must have been looking. I guess we have to assume the Rambam looked too quickly and then missed it. Anyway, the Dayan leaves. Then the Rambam writes, this is all the Rambam writes this in a letter about himself. He says, then all of a sudden, it's a Gemara in Yevamos. And sure enough, he finds it in the Gemara near the end of Yevamos, and he runs and he sends somebody to go run and catch up to the Dayan and tell him that he found the source. And then the Rambam says, you know, this got me thinking. Mela, for example, let's say, you know, a halacha in Hilchus, halacha in Hilchus with Seach or Shemunas Nefesh, you expect to find in Sanhedrin or in Makkos. Those are the primary places in the Gemara where it discusses such things. You would never expect to find it in Gittin or Yevamos of all places, and similarly with other kinds of halachas. You know, the Rambam says, maybe I should have at least, for those out-of-place type halachas, I should have written sources for those at least. Mela, and the Rambam gives an example. Let's say, for example, Hilchos Shabbos. You expect to find Hilchos Shabbos in Shabbos or in Erevin. You wouldn't expect to find there are Hilchos Shabbos as it happens in the Masechta Avodah Zarah. So I should note, the Rambam says, I should write an index that this particular halacha is not in Shabbos or in Erevin, it's in Avodah Zarah. And similarly with others, in the event that Rambam didn't have the time to write such a sefer, that Rambam lived to just short of 70, and he was extremely busy, but that's from then until now, all the Noisei Kalim, and eventually the Rebbe in our generation, all worked on this. One of the major things that they work on is indeed to find the Rambam's various sources for the halachas that he wrote, both the ones in place and the ones out of place. Anyway, the point is that this also relates to this Gemara over here, where Shmuel is saying that a person ultimately, even his head was chopped off, ultimately he's killed by the wind rather than by the actual head chopping itself. The Gemara continues. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina says another meaning of Kol Choyli, the one thing in life that causes many different sicknesses, is Tsoya, is the body's waste. And the Gemara says, Omar, as we learn in the Braisa, Tsoya Sachoitem, the waste, the mucus from the nose, with Tsoya Sa'oizen, and the mucus and the wax from the ear, Ruban Kosha, a lot of them is bad for a person. They harm his health. And when you tell me off, a little of them is good. A little bit of mucus in the nose helps trap things that otherwise would get into your breathing passages and then worse. So they get trapped in mucus and then you sneeze and then you expel them from the body. A little bit of ear wax is also good. It helps lubricate the ear canal and it also helps trap bacteria and whatnot. But too much of it is no good. So we see that soya, we see that the body's wastes are the cause of many different kinds of illnesses. The Gemara continues, Rav Chanina amazut sina. Rav Chanina has yet another definition of kol choyli, that it refers to cold. The Om Rav Chanina, as Rav Chanina says, we learned this most recently in Bava Kama, a kol bidei shemayim chutz mitzinim pachim. Everything is in the hands of Hashem. Everything that happens to a person in his life is in the hands of Hashem, except for tzinim pachim. Sinim means cold. Pachim, Rashi says, means blowing. So it's not the same thing as the wind that Shmuel was talking about. Shmuel was talking about even a neutral wind that's not particularly cold. Rav Chanina is saying, Dafka, a cold wind is harmful to a person's health. Tosfos explains differently that Sinim means cold and Pachim means heat. Now, Tosfos also points out here and in other places in Shas where it mentions this point that we don't mean, for example, the Gemara famously says, "Akol b'dei shamayim, chutz miyiras shamayim." That means as far as a person's midas, as far as a person's actions, those miyiras shamayim is not in the Eibishter's hands. He leaves us b'chir chafshis. But here we're talking about the kind of things, the kind of mishaps and misfortunes and things like that that happen to a person. All of them are controlled by Hashem, except for, according to Rashi, blowing cold wind, and according to Tosfos, heat or the effects of excessive heat or cold, that a person is responsible for themselves to make sure to bundle up to bundle up in the winter and to wear appropriate light clothing in the summer. And if he gets sick, and he doesn't do that, and he gets sick, then it's his fault. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, sinim pachim mederech ikesh, sinim pachim, cold blowing winds, according to Rashi, cold and heat, according to Tosfos, are in the way of the stubborn person. Shomer nafsha yirchak mehem, or the crooked person, ikish. Shomer nafsha yirchak mehem, the person who guards his soul, guards his life, will guard him, will stay away, will stay far away from them, and make sure to dress appropriately. Marsha brings in this connection, a medrash that where Antoninus asks Rebbe, daven for me, daven a special tefillah that I should be protected from harm. So Rebbe says Hashem should help you, Hashem should save you from the cold. Antoninus says, what do I need that tefillah for? All I need to do is put on an extra layer. So Rebbe says, fine, I daven for you that Hashem that you shouldn't be harmed by the heat. Oh, Antoninus says that's a good bracha. Maybe nowadays less so because they have air conditioning, but back then, where they didn't have, then yeah, he could really harm a person. So as Mashal brings, and you know, we have in Kapitul Yud Tes of Tilim, they nister mechamosa, nobody can hide from the heat of the sun, but a person is responsible to do what he can to protect himself from that, and then ask the Eibishter to help him with the rest. I've mentioned in this shiur before a story involving Rabbi Chezkel Abramsky, the Chazon Yechezkel. He was a rav in Russia. He was one of the rabbonim who remained there after the communist revolution. He was like the Friedrich Rebbe and like other rabbonim of that period. He was doing what he can to keep Yiddishkeit alive over there. He and the Friedrich Rebbe worked closely on various things. Earlier, by the way, he had also for a period at one point they wanted him to be a Rosh Hashiva and Temple Tmimim and Lubavitch, but they didn't end up taking him for the job. I've heard various versions of why not. In any case, he was an enormous Talmud Chacham. He was a rav in some town in Russia. Eventually, the Russians caught him and sentenced him to 3 years in Siberia. So Siberia, freezing cold, and obviously they don't give the prisoners fur coats. So many people were dying of the cold. So Rabbi Chezkel turns to Eibishter and says, he quotes this Gemara, and he says, you know, b'med varam amurim, when a person has the ability to have proper clothing, and he chooses to go out in the winter without the proper clothing, and he catches a cold, that's his fault. But over here, where I don't have that option, then it goes back to you, the Eibishter, hakol bidei shamayim, it has to be in your hands because it can't be in mine. So they say that during he was there that entire 3 years, he never even caught a cold. Well, meanwhile, the people around him are dropping like flies. So that's another meaning. Again, Rav Chanina says that's another meaning of kol machla, that the Eibishter will protect you from the effects of extreme weather. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with another explanation of kol machla. Yeah, that's gonna happen. Yeah. I guess the only thing you can do, given that sinim pacha mederech ikesh, I guess try to stay out of the line of the air conditioner. I guess what can you do? Yeah. All right. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula Yud Beis Tevis. The last couple of days installments has been the Rebbe talking about in a sicha from Parshas Bolak Nun Aleph right before the 3 weeks about how Yehovchu Yom Elul Sosim Ol Simcha, and how even now we can see the Yom Rotzim Hashem in it, and Lasid Lover, there'll be even greater than the Yom Tovim that we have now. So now, the Rebbe talks about, you know, we talk about Purim in a way as the ultimate Yom Tov. There's a Medrash that says, that Rambam brings it at the end of Hilchos Megillah, that all the Yom Tovim in the future are going to be bottled except for Purim. So actually, he says kolak suv masiv nibato. He says kolak suv masiv nibato chutz mimegilas Esther, and it also talks about that Purim will never be bato. As in fact, it says in the Megillah itself that lo yavrum etecha yehudim zichrim lo yosef mizanum, Purim will always be celebrated evenly most of Mashiach. But now the Rebbe says in the Sicha that the fasts that will become Yom Tovim in a way are going to be even greater than Purim. Because what are we saying about Purim? We're saying it won't be bottled. That means, in other words, that unlike the other Yom Tovim, which are going to be pale and insignificant compared to the Gilurim of Yemos HaMashiach, we're saying that Purim will not, that Purim will still retain its importance. But on the other hand, then that means for sure that the Yom Tovim that are going to be newly created when Mashiach comes, the Freilach HaTish above and the other three, those are going to be even greater than Yemei HaPurim, which just retains its current importance. Those are going to gain an importance that they never had before.
Hanukkah too, also.
So Hanukkah, actually, I don't know that it says the same thing about. I mean, maybe. I mean, the Ramban brings at the beginning of Parashas Baaloscho, when you have the thing over there, it says the Medrash says that Aaron felt bad that he hadn't participated in the Hanukkah Samizdeach with the Nisiyim, and the Eibishter tells him, don't worry, as Rashi brings on the Pasuk, yours is greater, because you light the menorah, which will never be bottle. And the Ramban asks, what do you mean? If you mean the menorah in the Beis Mikdash, that is bottle, nowadays just as the Korbanos are. But it means the neiros of Hanukkah, which Rakhtaka will never be bottled. Okay, so there, I mean, I guess, Bechlal, I mean, what does it mean when we say that, when we say that the other Yom Tovim would bottle? It doesn't mean we're going to start eating chametz on Pesach. It doesn't mean that we're not going to be blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah. It just means that compared to the Giluim of Yemos HaMashiach, those things will be felt to be much less important. But Purim not, and so yeah. Finishing off halachas of the bathroom, a person holds himself back when he needs to go to the bathroom and he delays. Now, we talked about before, a person can delay to go to someplace more private or whatever. We just learned in the Gemara that that's a reason why to have basic cases. But anyway, if a person unnecessarily delays, then it's an issue of bal teshaktzu. A person is not allowed to make himself disgusting. In Madura Bastra, the Alter Rebbe had given more detail about it. It really depends how badly he needs to go, the Koyach HaMoshech, the Koyach HaDoicha, basically how desperately does he need to go. But then it's Baal Teshachtu. Then when it comes to Ketanim, when it comes to urine, if he holds back, then it's not only Baal Teshachtu, it's also Lo Yivacha Ocher, that there should be no sterile person among you, because as we learned earlier, when a person holds back urine, it can affect his fertility. What's the shiur? I mean, the shiur is basically to get to a place where it's tzniyastik. Before it's a sakana, that I don't know exactly. Right. Yeah. Okay. The last thing is, the Alter Rebbe points out that a person has to be careful to wipe very thoroughly, because later on in Hilchos in the Halachos of Shema, the Alter Rebbe talks about that soya b'mkoyim b'mashu. When there's soya on other parts of the body, then there's a certain minimum amount that there needs to be in order for him to say divrei Torah, divrei Tefillah. But when it's b'mkoyim, when it's in the area where it came out of, then even a mashu of it is a problem. So if possible, now the Alter Rebbe goes into detail, it depends how deeply it is, basically, but whatever, the best thing, if possible, is to wash with water, or nowadays they have wet wipes that accomplish the same kind of thing, and that way you get rid of any trace of it. That's the Gemara mentions that point, right? That if it's so deeply in that it wouldn't even be visible when you're sitting, then yeah, lo'nit natural malach asharis, right? But yeah, indeed.
God,